Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. We talk every month with contributor Robert Cohen, the cellist for the Milwaukee-based Fine Arts Quartet, about the life of a working and touring professional musician. As we've learned over the years, it can be a uniquely challenging occupation.
Cohen joins us on the line now via Skype to pick up where we left off last month. Hi, Robert. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you too, Bonnie.
You know, since our last conversation last month, you're talking about strings and we're talking about how important they are. And we got on to the subject of, like, what happens if a string breaks or something happens in the middle of a performance. And then I started thinking, well, maybe this month we should talk about disasters, you know, things that go wrong and how you deal with them and what some of the most interesting things that have happened to you that were not part of the original concert plan over the years. And is that something you're willing to tackle?
Oh, yes. You know, it's so easy to remember all the disasters. It's not always so easy to remember all the wonderful moments. But the disasters definitely stick in your mind.
Well, so, one hopes that there are more good moments than disastrous moments. But
yeah, I'm sure there are. I mean, there have been certain really frightening things that have happened to me. I remember, you know, you never forget those moments. And, you know, almost life and death. I remember taking a taxi from Rio de Janeiro to the airport, and it was pouring with rain. I got into this taxi, and I very quickly realized that there were no windscreen wipers on this thing. There was he just didn't have any. There were probably rubber was something that, you know, was very rare, or, you know, it would get stolen off the cars or something. So we're driving along on the motorway at high speed with this man, with the taxi driver, reaching out the side window to the front window, trying to wipe the water away and not being able to see anything. And I just thought, this is absolutely it. I'm going to die in a ditch and nobody's going to know where I am. And it was completely and utterly terrifying.
Yeah, that's making me kind of get cold sweats just hearing about it.
But I am here. So
yeah, obviously you survived. Yes, you survived that.
Yeah, but it's not to be forgotten, that moment.
And no.
I probably check on taxis now that they do have working windscreen wipers, you know.
Things you don't think you need to check, but you must. Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, there also have been kind of those frightening moments when, oh yes, I remember crossing the border into, I don't know whether it was Hungary or somewhere like that. In the middle of the night, I was being taken in the car and got to this border control point. And I think I was very young, and it was just the driver who didn't really speak any English. And we stopped at the border, and there was this discussion between this man on the border and the driver. And finally, they wanted to look at my cello. And it became clear that what I really needed to show them was some serial number for my cello. Well, as you can probably guess, a cello made in 1700 doesn't have a serial number printed on the side. And so I just got into this complete panic. I thought, they're not going to let me go through. It's the middle of the night. Well, are we going to go back? Are we going to go forward? And then suddenly I remembered that inside the cello, if you look through one of the F holes, on the back of the instrument is a label that was handwritten by the maker, which had his name and the city that it was made in and a date for when the instrument was made. And this instrument was made in 1700. So fortunately, they took 1700 as the serial number and I was allowed through. But it was certainly very frightening for me at that time. I remember being just didn't know what to do, and I thought, I'm really stuck now.
Right, or that they were going to confiscate the cello.
Yes, anything could have happened. But, you know, that's another one of those unforgettable, horrible situations.
Well, what about on the platform itself? Have you had moments where something just went so horribly wrong and you thought, I don't know how I'm going to recover from this?
Yeah, well, actually, talking about the strings situation, I mean, it does happen that strings break. I mean, it's very rare, but Some time ago, I was playing an incredibly difficult cello concerto by H.K. Gruber and in Spain, and he was conducting the performance, and it was live on the radio. And as I was sort of about 10 minutes into this half an hour piece, my top A string just completely snapped. And of course, it's like a gunshot almost when it goes off, and you're in absolute surprise. You don't know what's actually happened. And I was really in the depths of playing, and I just suddenly realized, and everybody stopped, and I realized I couldn't continue. So I went off the stage and, you know, with shaking hands, as one at that point, tried to restring a new A string onto the cello, tune it up, get it settled, get back onto the platform. All the microphones around you, everybody's kind of waiting. And we started to get through, and everything seemed fine. I mean, you kind of settle down after a while, but you are kind of shaking from the whole thing. And then it happened again.
Oh my gosh.
I just could not believe it. I mean, it was just complete and utter disaster. And I thought, this is the end of my career. You know, you feel like sort of, you know, nobody can really believe that this, you know, they've never witnessed anything like it. So it must be your fault, or you certainly feel like it at the time. And I had to go off again and change the string again. And we started sort of halfway through and finished the performance. I don't remember anything about the performance at all, except that those dramatic moments. And it turned out, actually, that I had a sort of strings from a bad batch, and other people who had those strings had the same similar problem. But it only happened really to me once like that, and it was really so disturbing.
Did you manage to maintain a professional relationship with the composer, or did he never talk to you again?
I know, I think he was fine. I'm not sure about the radio station. I think they had second thoughts about me. But there have been sort of situations like that, you know, just off stage as well. I remember, for instance, I was conducting an orchestra in a concert. The overture I was conducting, then I was going to play a cello concerto directing the orchestra from the cello in the first half, and then conducting a symphony in the second half. And the overture was a Beethoven overture. It was about 10 minutes or so. And I thought, well, it was live on television. And I thought, I've got to get myself really prepared to come off the stage after the overture, pick up my cello, just check it for a second and get back on the stage, because, you know, you can't take too much time on live television. So unusually, I had my cello sort of out of its case, already in the dressing room to be picked up. So I said to the people backstage, please, can we lock the dressing room door? Because I just don't want anybody going in there while the cello's laid out there. But be here when I come off, because obviously I've got to be really quick. So everything seemed to be fine. Only when I got backstage after the overture, the room was locked and this man had disappeared.
Oh no.
So somebody went off to try to find him, and they couldn't find him in the first 2 or 3 minutes. And then they said, well, the only thing is we're going to have to smash the door down. And I was thinking of my cello lying out there and bits of flying wood from the door flying across the room and destroying it. You know, I was in a complete state while this was going on. But again, just fortunately, it worked out okay. And I got my cello, I got back on the stage and played. And the weird thing is, when you've been so shaken up, sometimes you just play without even worrying about anything that you might normally worry about. And it all goes fine.
Do you have anything in all of these experiences where it's like something humorous that was unexpected?
Yes. Oh, yes. I remember, for instance, when I first played with the Amadeus Quartet, I think I was about 26, and I was going to play with the world famous Amadeus Quartet. I was going to play the Schubert Quintet, the second cello part. And I went to rehearse it. And the very first rehearsal was in the house of one of the players. And I was so kind of nervous and really, really careful. And in the slow movement, we just played really the first movement right the way through, like a performance. It seemed to me like not a rehearsal, but like a concert. And in the slow movement, the first violin and the second cello, that was me, have this kind of pizzicato notes. They have to go exactly with him at the right time. And so I was just staring at him intently, making sure that every single pizzicato was in the right place, because I was so nervous. And suddenly, for the first time in the rehearsal, he stopped and he looked at me, and I thought, this is it. I'm out, you know, definitely. They don't want me. This isn't going to work. I've done something wrong. And he said to me, did you hear the one about the two violinists on a street corner in New York? And one said to the other, what's your violin? And the other friend said, it's a 1699 Stradivarius. And he said, boy, that's cheap. So he told this joke.
It took me a second to get it.
Yes. Well, it took me a second to get it too. But I realized, you know, and that was it. It was like he broke the ice with me and suddenly everything was okay. And we were really good friends. And the rehearsals went beautifully. And we had, you know, we spent many years together. So, but that was that kind of moment that was really fantastic. Another moment actually just came to mind was that when I was playing in Leipzig with Kurt Mazur, the great conductor, in his orchestra at that time in Leipzig, Gewandhaus. And my first son, Joshua, had just been born, and my wife was with me, and my wife and Joshua in the audience in the rehearsal. Now, Kurt Mazur was a very, very serious man, very, very serious about rehearsals, and, you know, I was kind of ready for all of this, and we were rehearsing Tchaikovsky, and in a moment when he was discussing something with the orchestra, suddenly Joshua made some sort of noise, and my wife and Joshua were sitting well back in the hall so as not to disturb, but Kurt Mazur heard Joshua make some sort of crying noise for a moment, and he very, very slowly turned around to the auditorium, and I just thought, oh my goodness, this is really, I've done all the wrong things here, we should, you know. And he just said, very slowly, he said, yes, it's Daddy. Like this. And I thought, okay, it's all right now, you know.
That's not what you usually hear in a rehearsal.
No, and fortunately, I think Joshua was happy for the rest of the time, too. So,
yes. And that is a story that you can tell to your grandchildren.
Indeed. And I have a feeling that Joshua might even listen to this now. So he'll be amused that I brought that story up.
Right. You can embarrass him with his own children.
Yes.
Yes. He once interrupted Kurt Mazur. Well, Robert, this has been, as always, such a fantastic discussion. I always love, and these kinds of stories are, I mean, all musicians have variations on these themes, but it is so interesting to hear the ones that you've, at least a few. I know there are many more.
Oh, there are, yes.
We'll have to do
In our future chats, we'll no doubt other things will crop up because there are just so many funny moments.
Yes. Well, I look forward to those future moments and and we will talk soon.
Super. Thanks so much, Bonnie.
Robert Cohen is the cellist for the Milwaukee-based Fine Arts Quartet. He joins us each month for a segment called On That Note with Robert Cohen.